And we'll stick with the aquatic environmental theme that we've already established in this hour, because the Rogue River of today is very different from the Rogue River of just a decade ago. Three major dams are gone: Savage Rapids near Grants Pass, Gold Ray closer to Medford, and Gold Hill Dam in between them. So the river flows freely from Lost Creek Dam above Shady Cove all the way to the ocean. Fish can swim the whole way. But fish also live in tributary streams, and attention is focused on getting out smaller dams on those. A number of partners are involved in the effort, and to bring us up to date, we have Brian Barr, the Executive Director of the Rogue River Watershed Council, with us. Brian, welcome to The Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Great pleasure also to follow Dan Isaac with a great conversation about trying to figure out where fish are. We're trying to make things difficult for them by getting fish to places that they haven't been before, or at least not in a long time.
I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, I mean, these efforts do sort of work not necessarily hand in hand, but he's talking about trying to map all the aquatic species, fish included, obviously, and you're trying to make sure that fish can get to places where they haven't been.
That's right, or haven't been in a long time. You know, mm-hmm. There are a lot of dams and diversions and road culverts that block fish access all over the West. We've got a lot of migratory fish species that want to get as far as they can up those streams. We're trying to remove those barriers so that those fish can get further up into the aquatic system than they have been able to, you know, over the past 100 years or so.
So what knowledge exists already about how well dam removal has done to getting fish up into some of these places they hadn't been in a while?
Right. Well, you know, there's a fair bit of research that shows that the efforts here in the Rogue that you just recapped on the main stem of the Rogue River, after Gold Ray Dam was removed, Savage Rapids came down. They worked on Gold Hill. We're seeing fish get up to the hatchery at Lost Creek Lake weeks, sometimes a month earlier than they had been since those dams were in place. So, you know, those fish were able to cross those structures.
They did have ladders. Yeah, I know.
They did have ladders, but it took a long time for those fish to get there. And a lot of these migratory fish are on a clock. You know, they're trying to get upstream so that they can spawn salmon, steelhead, Pacific lamprey. The fact that those fish are able to get up into the higher elevation waters that are cooler just means that more of those fish are going to survive to spawn, and we're going to get more fish coming down, and the next generation 5 years later is going to be stronger than the previous generation. So those are the results that we're seeing from the dam removals on the main stem of the Rogue. A couple of years ago, we worked on two dams on Evans Creek, Fielder and Weimer Dam. This year, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife folks that were out monitoring fall Chinook spawning in the Evans Creek system, which is where those dams were located, found fall Chinook in the West Fork of Evans Creek, a tributary to Evans Creek, for the first time ever. First time ever.
Wow.
So since they've been monitoring Chinook in Evans Creek, which is decades, they've never seen fish in that tributary. Removing those dams and having a little rainstorm in the middle of October helped get those big-bodied fall Chinook up into the little tiny tributary way up in the Evans Creek system. So those are the kind of results we're banking on happening when we're removing fish passage barriers in the Rogue, and we're seeing the results of that with those sorts of observations.
I want to be clear: it's not that fish were never there; it's just that people never saw them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, since people have been monitoring, mm-hmm. they haven't been seen there. That's right. So that's really what we're trying to do: is get fish back to all the streams on a regular basis that they used to occupy in the past. It's a hedge against bad things happening, right? Bad things happen to the environment all the time. There's disturbance that's man-made, and there's disturbance that's natural. Nature's hedge against that is having lots of fish get to lots of places, and so we're trying to restore that.
So, that must be an exciting feeling to know that there are fish in places that you'd never seen them before, but at the same time, you're also thinking, where can we replicate this? So where else are you looking now?
Absolutely. Well, you know, just to sort of put a scope on the situation, there are still – we've removed – probably 50 or 60 fish passage barriers in the Rogue. Maybe it's closer to 70. There are still thousands of known fish passage barriers in the Rogue. A lot of those are road culverts in publicly managed lands. They impede fish access. They're not complete blocks, but they impede fish access. So again, we're talking about this. Let's make sure fish can get to these places easily. You know, we're the Rogue River. I work for the Rogue River Watershed Council, so I'm really heavily invested in making sure restoration happens in the kind of the upper half of the Rogue Basin. We're really focused on parts of the Little Butte Creek system, the upper part of the Bear Creek system, the upper part of the Grave Creek system. Those are the places where we're really heavily invested in fish passage. We have 26 known fish passage barriers that are on a list that the Department of Fish and Wildlife developed about 4 years ago. We're concentrating our efforts on those 26 or so fish passage barriers. But Applegate Watershed Council, Illinois Valley Watershed Council, Water Watch of Oregon, Rogue Basin Partnership, all of these groups are working in a sort of a coordinated fashion to try to address all of the high priority barriers throughout the basin. So there's really important parts of the Upper Illinois, really important tributary streams in the Applegate system that need work, and all of these partners are going to be working together now. Thanks to this generous gift from the Hewlett Foundation and Resources Legacy Fund, we're going to be working together to try to get as many of those fish passage barriers restored as possible.
Brian Barr is the executive director of the Rogue River Watershed Council, our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Yes, there is new funding you just heard about from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation to remove some further fish barriers in the Rogue River system. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the process of removing dams and culverts and other things that impede fish passage. 800-838-3760 on the phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. So this is a fairly recent thing, I understand. Just late November, the announcement of the Hewlett Foundation.
Yeah, right. Just right after Thanksgiving, they announced the awards, and you know, I think we feel very fortunate that the Rogue Basin rose to the level of a place that that they wanted to make a substantial investment in. So those folks are helping us by generating some capacity so that watershed councils and other organizations can really concentrate on addressing fish passage barriers. In the past, that work in the Rogue, it's all great work, but it's been done kind of one dam at a time, right? We're working on this one, maybe two. The idea behind the investment that these funders are making in groups down here is to try to up the ante, increase the pace, deliver 5, 6, 7 fish passage barrier projects every summer so that we can make our way through that 60-some-odd priority fish passage barrier list that the Department of Fish and Wildlife came up with a couple years ago.
So what's number one on the list then? What's number one through three or one through five, however you want to present this as the major
obstacles?
Yeah,
well, the original list was 68 barriers. Number one and number two are gone. Those were Fielder and Weimer dams on Evans Creek. Those were removed 2 years ago, and I was very fortunate to have a role in that process. The new number one is either Pomeroy Dam, which is on the Illinois River, or Murphy Dam, which is on the Applegate River. And number three is probably a structure on the main stem of Little Butte Creek, either Charlie or Walcott Dam, something like that. So we're looking at relatively large structures that provide irrigation water. I think all three of those dams provide irrigation water to farmers. They're high on the list because they're on large tributaries. A lot of fish and a lot of different types of fish swim or try to swim past those structures every spring and fall.
And those smaller irrigation structures generally don't have fish ladders or passage of any kind?
Yeah, very, very rarely. So really what you're talking about is, again, fish can get past those things, but the stream flows have to be just right for fish to be able to get past them. And so they kind of mill around at the bottom of those dams and wait for flows to be perfect, and then they can make their way past. But again, milling around in large numbers on the downstream side of the dam is not good for them getting far up the stream system.
Talk about the process you have to go through if you want to take out one of these dams, because you're dealing with not just potentially the owner of the dam and the owner of the land that the dam is adjacent to, but then the people who are relying upon the irrigation water and how you hold them harmless or at least find ways to get them to continue to get irrigation water without the presence of the dam. It sounds like a bit of a minefield to navigate.
Yeah, well, it's a complicated process for sure, and you've described the situation absolutely correctly. There's the person whose land the dam abuts, the landowner, and then in the case of an active a structure that actively diverts water for irrigators, you may have 19, 20, 30 landowners that then you also have to negotiate with to try to make sure that their interests are met. You know, those folks have a valid water right. And so part of the process on an actively diverting structure is to figure out a way to allow those irrigators, if they want to continue irrigating, which in almost all cases they do, we have to figure out a way to make sure they get their water. So it's designing a pumping station, or it's, in some cases, for example, we're working on a project right now on Wagner Creek near Talent.
That's the Beeson-Robison?
Beeson-Robison Diversion Dam. There are 19 water right holders. They're all very interested in continuing to irrigate. So we're going to remove the dam, and then we're going to reprofile the stream channel in a way that it replicates a stream channel, but it allows the gravity-fed irrigation to continue. So that was the solution we came up with there. It's slightly more expensive than a pumping station, but it doesn't require the folks to pay the power bill associated with a pumping station. And it will allow fish of all sizes to move upstream unhindered. It'll act just like a stream, and it will act just like a diversion dam.
Is this similar to the system that replaced the Bear Creek Dam in the heart of downtown Medford?
Yeah, similar to that on a much smaller stream. I think this particular design is going to look more like a stream than that one did, but that one does a really good job. There's examples of these all over the place. We use them pretty commonly at road culverts that you don't want to replace the culvert, and so you build a reprofiled stream channel. They work great. Relatively expensive to build. They're a little bit more problematic to permit. But, you know, so negotiations with landowners and water right holders, then you got to find the funding to build the project. In the case of that Wagner Creek project, we're talking about $100,000 or so to do the building. And then you have to work with all the permitting agencies to get all the permits in place. And once all those three pieces fall into place, you just pick a time between June 15th and September 15th and get the construction crew out there and get to work.
Oh, that's right. You're limited to just those times.
That's right. You've got a pretty short window when the construction activities aren't going to be causing a lot of harm to the fish that you're trying to help.
Okay. Calls are starting to pile up. Let's get the headphones on. Brian Barr is the executive director of the Rogue River Watershed Council. We're talking about removing smaller dams and smaller fish obstacles on smaller streams. You can join us at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Kenton, Rogue River. Welcome to the Exchange.
Yeah, good morning, Jeff and Brian. I actually have two questions. One may be a little bit difficult. How much potential is left in the system to increase the amount of fish, salmon?
Mm-hmm.
And the second question is, if a person knows of a problem in a stream, or if they want to participate in the removal of these burials, who do they contact? What do they do?
Okay,
thank
great
you.
Questions. Thank you, Kent. Appreciate that. So, first of all, the potential. I mean, essentially, how many more fish can you get up into all these hills and hollers, and how do people participate?
Sure. So I'll take those questions in the order that they were provided. Thanks, Kent, for calling in. You know, we know that the production potential in the Rogue is just a fraction of what it was in the past. And there are so many environmental conditions that are contributing to that. And fish passage is just one of them. So, again, the goal of these fish passage projects is to make sure that fish can get further up into the system, into cooler water that's in the headwaters of these tributaries, just as quickly as they can, and to occupy, at least more heavily, occupy habitat that haven't been occupied heavily in the past for their spawning activities. So, from my perspective, the fish passage work, dam removal work in particular, is one of the most important things that we can be doing, because, again, we're bringing fish up to the water that's cool, and we're opening up habitats or creating new habitats that they can use for spawning. You know, we can probably double, possibly triple, the amount of fish that we have in the Rogue River doing lots of things. Fish passage isn't going to get us there on its own. You know, the stream side forest conditions are, particularly in the developed parts of the Rogue Valley, there needs to be some work there to have mature forests along the streams that will prevent warming of the streams. There are a couple other things that have to fall into place. But there's a lot of production potential, but there's a lot of restoration that needs to be done for us to reach that.
And if people want to help, if they want to participate in the process, let you know about streams they think could be good candidates for efforts like you're making, how can they help?
Right. So I think there's a couple of avenues. You can easily contact the Central Point Office of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife if you have an idea for a project, and they will direct you to the right people to help you get that project done. Or if you know which watershed council, which watershed you live in, you can contact the watershed councils directly. At the Rogue River Watershed Council, field calls like that all the time. They don't always lead directly to projects, but in instances where we think a project will help us meet our mission, we're eager to work with landowners. So if you live in the Applegate, call the Applegate Watershed Council. Illinois Valley's the Illinois. The upper part of the Rogue Basin is Rogue River Watershed Council. Sam's Valley area, seven basins.
All right, here's another call from Kevin and Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange with Brian Barr. Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, hello, guys. I thought you may have touched on that when I was first calling. I'm curious about the creek that goes from a tributary of Bear Creek in up towards Wagner Peak through Talent. Just wondering if you know if the status of that creek might be migrating fish. Am I being clear enough?
Yeah, it sounds like Wagner Creek itself we're talking about. Thanks for that, Kevin.
Yeah, you absolutely. You are. I'm sure you're talking about Wagner Creek. The only other creek that sort of runs that direction is Anderson Creek. And they both harbor migratory fish, for sure. predominant use is by summer and winter steelhead. But most people think that coho salmon probably in small numbers use Wagner Creek as well. They probably don't use Anderson Creek. A lot of irrigation goes on along both of those streams. There are a lot of diversions and a lot of road culverts that impede passage. We're working on two of those structures on Wagner Creek right now, one of them in conjunction with Soil and Water Conservation District. So I think conditions for migratory fish are going to be, hopefully by fall of 2017, a whole lot better in Wagner Creek than they are right now.
How small a stream will you work with? I mean, are we talking streams that you can jump across pretty much even when they're big?
You know, I'm talking about streams that you can walk across in September and not get your feet wet. So we're really blessed in the Rogue Basin to have spectacular runs of fish, not necessarily the numbers that we want to see, but we've got really interesting runs of migratory fish in the Rogue Basin. And my personal favorite, aside from Pacific lamprey, is the summer steelhead. And summer steelhead are a group of fish that come in the summer, hence their name, and they mill around in the main stem of the Rogue River until the rains come. So right now, those guys are looking for places to go and spawn. And the streams that a lot of summer steelhead spawn in dry out in the summer. So they have this really interesting life history pattern where they spawn in streams that are ephemeral, and the young steelhead pop out of the gravel in the spring, and they come out and rear in the main stem of the Rogue River for a couple years, go out, back out to the ocean. It's a really unique life history, and it allows them to use streams that no other fish use. Because they dry out in the summer.
That is fascinating stuff. We have just a minute left here. How much money came in through the Open Rivers Fund? Is it enough to take care of one of these projects or a couple of them? Or?
Yeah, you know, so the funding that these guys very generously offered to us, the Resources Legacy Fund and the Hewlett Foundation, $100,000 came to Rogue River Watershed Council. About $115,000 came to Rogue Basin Partnership. It's mostly for capacity, and we're going to get that dam on Wagner Creek out next summer with the help of their gift.
Okay, between June 15th and September 15th.
That's absolutely right.
Brian Barr is the Executive Director of the Rogue River Watershed Council, giving us an update on efforts to remove dams and other obstacles to fish from tributaries of the Rogue River. Thanks so much for joining us today on the exchange.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. I appreciate it.